But many of them are among our greatest, such as Carl King's Barnum and Bailey favorite, which really can't be played slow. Slowly, excuse me. But in their vernacular, slow. It's what the British, it's what the circus people call a screamer. And that's what I called my circus album, Screamers. Because they all scream. And that's the name laid on it by the circus roustabouts and circus people. They had two kinds of marches, screamers and squealers. Squealers were the kind that featured the clarinets way up there going, that's a squealer. Otherwise, that's a screamer. That's a screamer. Music designed for a function. The acoustics of a marvelous old circus tent are quite unlike any other acoustics. Bands had to blow in those places. And they could blow in those places because they wouldn't blow anybody out of the place because nothing quite so dead as canvas. Nothing quite so marvelously absorbent as all those warm bodies with those clothes on. Somebody once asked Gadi Gazzazza, the one-time great director general of the Metropolitan Opera. They were having a very fancy dinner party one night, and people who had been to opera all over the world once said to Gatti, the conversation around the table was, what is your favorite opera house? What is your favorite opera house? Your favorite production, my dear. And the conversation got around to Gatti, and finally they said, well, Gatti, you produced opera all over the world. Tell us, what's your favorite opera house? He said, a full one. And that's what a circus tent always was a full one, jam-packed with people. The excitement of things, it could not possibly be da 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 da. Couldn't be that. I mean, that's not up on the toes. That's not up on the back of the horse. That's not enough. It has to smell like that circus does. It's all got to be there. And again, another one of the marches that's now happily making the rounds, and I always get a chuckle when I hear it. See somebody play it, or somebody comes up to me and says, hey man, have you heard that great Storm and Sunshine march? I said, yeah, I sure have. Again, we were playing some test pressings one night in the days when I was spending every weekend in Elkhart, Indiana on the Kahn Research Committee of CVDNA. Jim Nielsen and Gray Fitzgerald, myself, sometimes Bill Rovelli, sometimes Clarence Sawhill, who else, Mark Hinesley, we'd all get together every other weekend up there and just hack at what they were doing, blast it apart, or say what we thought was good, bad, or indifferent. And one of these occasions, I brought along another test pressing of another album of marches, and we were having a little social gathering at the home of Frank. But George was holding up the company. And George was an old circus man, old circus drummer. He'd played with Sousa, him and 20 million other guys. And all around, he'd been through all these things. And he was sitting back in the corner. And when, as we were going home, he said, Fred, there's a march you got to have. And it, of course, was In Storm and Sunshine. And he found a set of parts for me of an extinct march, date 1905. He found a set of parts at home. And he gave them to me. And when we recorded it, of course, he got the Fisher people to rejuvenate. And everybody now happily plays In Storm and Sunshine, which is the ultimate circus screamer, the absolute ultimate scream. That's how I stumbled on that one. But the circus leads in proper procession to the football field. Because that's another kind of service. And herein, there is everything. Show music, military marches, regimental marches, foreign marches, circus marches, every kind of thing. It's the final cataclysm of marches is the football field. Now, when you do sit down to play them, I urge you to play them with the same kind of clarity, the same preciseness with which you would play anything, with the same kind of care. And if you have difficulty finding out what is where in them, and who has ever seen a full score to a march, except I did meet somebody the other day who said he had made about a dozen full scores to marches. I spread them all out on the floor in the position of the wind ensemble. Now I just walk around, sit on the floor, and study each part from in the place where they are in the group. That's the only way I was ever able to really learn the marches beyond having known them since I was a kid. Those that everybody knows, that is. But even to know them and to know new ones, just put them out or spread them out on the floor, and you can spread them out in sections and learn them a bit at a time. But you really have to look at them all. And you should really check every part so that everything is very clearly understood. And of course, it's a great reward to play marches in varieties of style. I have, for some years now, been playing a group of marches on a program, not necessarily at the beginning or the end, but a group of three different kind of marches. Let's say a regimental march, a march from across the sea, and a circus screamer. Something like one of Henry Fillmore's marches, like Circus Bee, or His Honor, or whatever, along with maybe Lights Out and Our Director or whatever. I was aghast at a thing I was invited to conduct at Augustana College in Rock Island in January. They had a large festival band come in there, I don't know, 250 or something, huge group of good playing kids from all over the country. And I opened the march group with National Emblem. And I always ask when I go everywhere, and I think you should too, how many of you have ever played this piece before? And you know only three hands went up for the National Emblem? Three hands? And I keep asking, and then I have to ask almost out loud, well, what do you play? And of course, that dates me as a fuddud. But again, I beg you, please don't let these masterpieces just disappear for lack of our interest in them, because they're very worthy of our interest. In addition to making sure that everybody in every section plays these pieces with the same care and concern that they do any other piece, there is, of course, the percussion section. And my friends, my brothers on top of and under the skin, have lots of questions to ask on this subject. And I think this is a rather important one. And it's not just because I am a percussion player. These instruments are a vital part and parcel of the fabric of music, and particularly of the march. And they require a certain degree of care and respect in this regard. Have had presented to you here one of man's noble achievements, the bass drum. Likewise, one which man has set upon, indeed as he has his environment, to destroy. With a dedication to destroy. That I find very difficult to comprehend. More mayhem has been committed on this poor instrument than any I can think of. There may be many that have been more maligned, such as the guitar and the accordion and the ukulele. But I don't think any that has been more systematically destroyed than this one. First of all, I plead with you to accept the belief that it is a bass drum, not a baritone drum, not a tenor drum, not a soprano drum. But from the condition in which I hear most of them as I go around the country, you can only say it is a castrated drum. It has no gender whatsoever. It's really quite ridiculous. Many schools across the country will go to their local music store with purchase order in hand and order from my friend Bill Ludwig or from Mr. Slingerland or Mr. Pearl or whoever, just to not be commercial. A beautiful instrument like this. And it costs a rather goodly sum. It arrives, is taken out of the carton. All of these are unscrewed. And on the one head that is left there, there is placed on the inside six cross pieces of adhesive tape. Then 6 billion chicken feathers interlaced with large wads of paper are then deposited in there, and once again the head is returned to the shelf. And then the band director is happy, because you will not hear the bass drum. And he will not hear the bass drum because he couldn't hear it if he tried. And it's like television with the audio turned off. Lots of action going on. Mommy and Daddy are looking out there, and boy, I'm doing it, you know. But nothing's happening. The drum was castrated. Here we do. Spend all that money, buy that drum. Ludwig makes them good, delivers them when he can. You take it home, stick all those feathers in it. Then, after you stick the feathers in it, then you buy another damper for this head. You put the left hand on this side, stick your knee in this one, and then you hit it with a powder puff. Oh, that's too resonant. Excuse me. Sorry. You might as well hit the floor. It's cheaper. Just in the picture. I'm sorry, I don't get it. It's getting so people don't like to see me come anymore. But it's really very sad. I beg you, I plead with you, let's go back to the base clinic. The knife clinic. Or let's call it a neuter clinic. But let's go back down there, where the instrument has resonance. This one is one of those rare breeds still around with calf heads. They're getting harder and harder to find. This one is a bass drum. I would even tune it down about two screws less than this. Great combination. The mush bag has to go. You all have one at home. May I ask you to enshrine it with gold paint and put it up on the wall and forget it. Because it serves no contemporary purpose that a better beater furnishes better. We have it. It exists because of only one thing. The arrival on the scene of that great invention of man, the radio. In the days when fidelity was nothing, all of the receiving apparatuses, microphones, and transmitting gear were of a constructive nature that would not allow the diffused, non-measured vibrational sound of bass drums into the microphones. They distorted and chattered the sound. And it is a fact that that is what indeed was done. And so since everybody was broadcasting, and everybody had a bass drum, this thing came along, which is designed to make no sound. Or if it does make sound, forces the head beyond the point of distortion, where the tone is not there, but the obliteration is. Better than alone the pure felt one is a wood one, which I use, wrapped with two thicknesses of chamois that you skin down on it and just put a rubber band on it. And that takes away the harder texture of this and allows a very soft stroke, but immediate impact and immediate sound. And the other thing that we must try to do is to make a change here. Now, I beg you to join me in another campaign. And this too has something to do with the ecology. And the slogan for this campaign is, help stamp out VBD. Vertical bass drum. Gotta go. Have to have horizontal bass drum. Because it's the only thing that makes sense. Have you seen any vertical kettle drums lately?
I haven't. There they are, all beautifully horizontal. Right down there where the gravity is. Right down there where nature is on the side of a cliff. All you gotta do is lift it up, let go of it, and there will be talk. The only reason we play it in the vertical position anyhow is because that's the only way you can carry it around outside. And for years it was carried outside with straps, still is, sometimes by one, sometimes by two, sometimes by 12, Wranglers. The only way you can carry it outside is that way, so therefore it was hit this way, which is fine if it's hit that way. But it rarely is hit that way these days. Because somebody said once that that's not the way to play the bass drum, and wrote half a dozen books on it, I guess. But somebody said that's not the way to play the bass drum, and I would like to have known who that was. Most likely the guy that made vertical bass drum stands. But they're developed after that, the technique of this, you know. which is so ridiculous. Technique. Because that's supposed to be the way to do it. You don't ever get any tone, nothing, get nothing. You can even hear the chamois rubbing against the head. But that's what that's supposed to do. I've even seen the book that said you're not supposed to play on the upstroke or the downstroke. The person who wrote that never marched any 10-mile parade. But the idea of this area, of this sound, the direct stroke is obviously the correct one. If for aesthetics you want to have a glancing blow like that, that's fine. But no matter how thin you slice the bologna, this has to hit the head sooner or later. No way to avoid it. Contact must be made. And so the bass drum and all other percussion instruments of every kind, the only way we can deal in the texture of them is with a different mouth. It is frozen. The sound of the cymbal is frozen. Xylophone, drum, skin, plate, membrane, block. The only way you can change it is with a different striker and the skill with which you strike and the amount of intensity with which you strike. So I beg you, enshrine it and find the harder. Start with wood and keep wrapping it with chamois until you're satisfied and the sound is there. If you don't have one of these or don't want to get one, your wood shop would be glad to make you a three-legged stand very inexpensively, which will do the same job. The purpose of this also further, and this is a little high, Bill has now come out with another one since the clinic I did for him in Chicago a couple of years ago, during which he died a thousand deaths at all the rattles in his bass drum holder. I've been trying to tell him that for years, but he had to sit there and die a thousand deaths before. The minute the clinic was over, there was a meeting of the engineering department. Now we have a new ring job, which is held together with shock cords and which is absolutely rattleproof and is now available. But you see the rattle is there. There's no way you can stop either the springs here or something rattling somewhere else. But there is no contact whatsoever in the new one. But the new drums also lower the drum so that it picks up the resonance of the floor, lowers it about at least another foot, so that as the drum is faced toward the conductor, away from the player, and is struck in this fashion, the sound comes out and directly to you, and the person can see the person. And besides, it's a little bit easier to share the music stand with the cymbal player without getting your ears cut off. So you have to think of that too. The general nature of this, being what it is, in the march area, there's only one thing more about which I wish to speak before this long day comes to its conclusion. I see no small snare drum here. Is there a small snare drum? A kind of like you have in a pair of sticks, please. I want you to observe these particular drums. This one, for field purposes, has the resonance dampened in it slightly, but it still makes our point. Another thing we've got to forget about that is that most of the people who want the bass drum dampened or keep their hand on it all the time are those people who don't like the sound of the drummer, who think it's too loud, can't stand it, or they just take up flute or something else. But if you're going to play the bass drum, as Harry Truman says, if you can't stand the heat in the kitchen, play the flute. it has to be the biggest thing going as it's being played. The next aspect of the percussion stuff for the marches is the field of nature. The sound that I like for the marches, and which I always used for the recording of the marches, was at least three, and after the first time, four drums after that, of different combinations of snares and heads, sizes and tension. Almost every march that we recorded, almost every march that we played, is of regimental nature or outdoor nature. And what they were originally written, this drum here is more like it than any other that you're allowed to see around. This one has that rare, fast disappearing thing called gut snares. Playing pieces of gut unwound with wire, just like you see it. And in this case, there are two plastic heads, and there is a tone control mechanism on the top head, and a small bit of dampening tape on the inside just to kill the ring. And this, of course, is now a standard procedure. I'll try to take the tone control off if I can. Now, this drum, as it stands now, I haven't even played it yet or touched it yet, but I'm sure it will have a certain kind of sound that I'm sure you will recognize. And what I'm going to do now is gradually loosen the snare. You can hear the rattle. We're going to be playing on a top snare one, he said, but it's this difference in sound. Oh, yeah. The wire snare, no cut at all, the stuff that makes a fast, sizzle sound. very fine, super sensitive, as the opposite of the gut snare and the deeper drum. And if it was mine, I would even have both heads a little more loose so that it would have that old drum core rattle. The idea is it's the combination of these sounds when you play marching. Just any old thing. Just follow me like this. And the idea of the different sounds together. Now, I'll play by yourself on that drum, and then I'll play on this. Go ahead. And this particular thing, and very open style, should be you. Right, but at that stress roll, it should be the open. You're playing in this style. And then when you combine, maybe even tenor drums, and maybe one in the middle that has plastic batter head, plastic snare head, and maybe a wire wound gut. You have three different sounds that are really quite magnificent, and that's what you hear on the record. It makes the sound just that much slightly different. And anytime that you can get deeper drums that you can use for this purpose, by all means, get them. And if you have a set of drums that you're getting rid of, because there's a new style come out, please don't throw away your old field drums. Remodel them, put gut back on them, loosen the head, and use them for this other dimension. Because you can always find a place to make them go. Thank you very much. The next thing, before we forget it, is the question about cymbals. In marches, the cymbal has a severe role to play. I want to bring them with me and come over to the bass drum too. The whole scene here about the marches is that for so much of the time, I'm quite sure that the composer, whoever he may be, however interested or disinterested he may have been in the parts he wrote for the percussion instrument, I think a lot of the time kind of left this up to the player. Sort of like the chart. It tells you how many bars, gives you a few chord symbols, and leaves you on your own. And I think that writing one bar of 6/8 time, a quarter and an eighth note, and then putting repeat signs for the next 31 bars, is just a rather easy way to get out of it. And I don't think that that's really what was intended, and I don't think there were very many percussion players in the world that ever really played them that way. Simply because that's not the nature of the music. And the bass drum parts of most of these marches, including Mr. Seuss's, are designed again for the open air, for the street, under the concept that if you're going like this, the band is going to stay together, because that great maestro is not up in front there. So God has something going for you. So the bass drum was what held everything together, and there was no point where the bass drum did anything but almost moronically, for hours. And the cymbals locked with it. Bass, drum, and cymbal. Which doesn't make much sense. But now, what we want to try to do here, he doesn't know anything about this yet, is we're going to make this one, let's make one attack right together.
One, two, three, go. Now let it ring. One, two, three, go.
Now the combination of those sounds, I believe, begins to make a change from just, let's play that together. And fine. We'll go far. just to have this is not quite enough for us now. Because we've now come off the street, we've come indoors, we've sat down in the chairs, and we are now going to play this material a little bit different. So, we can't go on with 32 bars of boom, boom, boom. And not only that, because the music has a different characteristic to it. There are two different sounds that complement each other. This is the bright one, and this is the dark one. Can I have yours first? In a variety of ways. Now, this is for me the ancient society of Ching Fung, once again. Now, this complement of sound is one that goes a long way toward coloring up the marches that you have heard me record. Simply because this is the brightness and this is the dullness. That's the Ching and this is the Fung. And since I was little child, that's what they've always added up to me. But the idea is that you use this to accentuate certain positive places. And it's almost invariably a color line of high brass or high point in the middle of a phrase or an open window that the composer has left you where there's nothing happening. And with some considerable concern, I started on this concept of playing marches this way. And it is, I think, a very valid way to colorize an otherwise situation that was designed for simply moving men through the street with no quarter, bang, bang, stop, stop, smash, smash. The cymbals that we use today are bigger and bigger and bigger. They've now gotten to be gongs with handles on them. And they are huge. You know, you've seen some of these cores that are now out around the country. Huge cymbals. And no one will ever tell me, I really never understand why it is when I go to Allstate, man, there are 14 burly guys back there. One poor little skinny redheaded girl with a cymbal. The big guys won't play. They leave it to the little girls. And then she goes like this, and her hair goes. And these instruments are, again, among man's most noble. And more you have in your kit bag different sizes and kinds of cymbals. And you should have different kinds and sizes. And the thinner, the better for a great many things. They all don't have to be, like my friend Bob Goodman, Stanton, concert cymbals. Or marching cymbals. I mean, that's good. That's good. Public relations. Sells a lot of cymbals. And I'm for that. But listening to the sound of them, remember, please, it's texture, thickness, diameter. But mostly thickness. And put together all kinds of cymbals. You can mix colors. You should mix colors. And for all these these things that are demanding, you should have lightweight cymbals that have the best possible sound. So save up your pennies and buy some good ones. They'll reward you in a variety of ways. Teach kids to take care of them. Provide either the rack that holds them or a stool to take care of them. Make sure that you learn how to take care of the straps. Learn how to tie the cymbal straps yourself, because when one of these things gets loose, it's pretty bad. I thought my career as a percussion player or as a musician had just about come to an end the first week I was at Interlaken, when life had just really begun for me. And I was playing cymbals in the Tchaikovsky Fourth Symphony. And that was the biggest thing on the program that night, so I knew I'd really made it. So I was roaring away on these cymbals at the end of that thing, and you know what it's like. And in those days at Interlaken, in front of the bowl, there was a waiting pool, reflecting, beautiful reflection, with about 3 feet of water. And I finished. And this one broke. And it, if you remember anything about Interlaken, percussion always played on the right side in the back row. And it went over the first riser, bang, bang. The next riser, bang, bang. It went over the edge and down in the water. And I just went back into the percussion room and got my little bag of sticks and walked back to the cabin. I knew I was through. I didn't even say goodnight or goodbye to anybody. I said, I'm glad packing my stuff. I seriously did. But I guess it was so funny that they let me stay. But I never forget it as long as I live. And every time I go someplace, I always inspect the symbol. It's a pretty good idea for you to do the same. Just remember that these are some of man's most noble inventions, and they deserve our care, feeding, and good health. They're a part of the ecology, too. That's more than enough for tonight. Thank you very much.